Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Welcome to this edition of The Dirty Inning, where a baby is our guest. Yes, that's right. And along with Justin, there's another baby as well.
Less than 15 seconds in, I'm getting burned from both ends.
This is The Dirty Inning. I am, I guess here I call myself Dr. Trevor Strunk. I just tweeted about how I don't do that, but I'm Dr. Trevor Strunk, and I am here with my son, who is fussy. And also Justin, who I don't think you are fussy right now.
No, but I am your son. People don't know that.
Yeah, it's a little weird part of this podcast. I'm 75.
Yeah.
Your dad's probably not 75.
No, but I also love the idea, because he's you, but I also love the idea that someone is going through your Twitter feed and fact-checking your regularities as far as how you describe yourself.
They just look at the doctor tweet and they're like, I rank this 2 out of 5 Pinocchios.
Is this guy a doctor or not? Are we two different people? And which one is the baby? And is Justin his son?
PolitiFact rates this podcast pants on fire. Welcome back. I'm glad we could make this happen. I'm sorry for the brief delay. It's been all my fault. Justin has been ready and willing, but I have been with child, just kind of hanging out with him. And turns out babies who are below 3 months are not the most reliable. Who would have known? Except me, who has another child who has been this age before.
Which is me.
Yeah, you, Justin.
Right. Yeah, what Trevor's referring to here is that our ultimate goal is to release full Dirty Inning episodes every other Monday. It is not Monday, but Trevor, I was also going to tell you, you don't have to worry. I don't think people are noticing that we have particular times that we try to get these out. That is, we do have a goal, but we just, you know, we don't.
Yeah, I forgot that the goal is more internal than
babies. You know, you roll the dice.
And, that's true.
You know, you gotta roll with the punches, and that baby just keeps punching you,
punching me and punching me and punching me. Anyway, I'm pretty excited about this one. I was really happy to find this.
You talking about the baby?
Yeah, I found this baby. This baby around here. It's pretty exciting. I get to keep it. No, I'm excited about this episode because I do you follow the NFL at all, Justin?
I mean, I do. I say I don't, but I kind of keep an eye on it. Yeah.
Are you like a fantasy guy? Do you like other teams, or do you just like, are you just an Eagles guy?
Oh, I guess this is something I don't really talk about. I'm a Packers guy who is also an Eagles guy.
That you're a Packers guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm an Eagles fan. I'm a Packers guy.
Okay. All right. Well, you might not know this, but the most recent phenom in the NFL is a guy named Patrick Mahomes. I think it's Mahomes. It might be Mahomes. I've never actually seen it pronounced. And it doesn't look like Wikipedia or anywhere has like a those kind of like fun phonetic things. Mahomes, Mahomes. Anyone's guess is, and I'm going to be saying it a lot, so I probably should have looked it up. In any case.
The reason we do these bi-weekly is because of how much research and of how well documented we make sure they are before we
found a way to pronounce this person's name. It's really strange. In any case, well, we'll just call him Mahomes. I think that's probably correct. But Mahomes is a quarterback for the Andy Reid-led Chiefs, and he is just lighting the world on fire. He had 6 touchdown passes in one game. He is like the fastest to 10 in a year. He had 10 touchdown passes in his first, I think, 2 or 3 games. Unbelievable start for him. And he is just like turning heads. And it turns out, I didn't realize this, but his father was a Major League Baseball pitcher. Yep. Well, you may not have known this, but hopefully you did, or else you weren't reading my DMs. Also a good baseball player in his own right. He touched 96 in 8th grade. So he could have made a run at that, but he seems to have made the right decision. Mahomes Sr. Did not play football professionally, but he did play football in college and high school. Well, he had an offer to play at Arkansas in college, but he didn't go. He played football in Lindale, Texas, which, you know, is like Texas is a powerhouse for football. And he was drafted by the Twins. He became a professional baseball player. And I learned about this because he commented about Mahomes was saying that Alex Smith, Mahomes Jr., was saying Alex Smith was like super nice to him when he played for the Chiefs. And like, he knew that Mahomes was going to take his job, but he was still like a good mentor and like really good to the kid. And he was saying, you know, like Alex Smith is a stand-up guy, which, I mean, it seems like he's a nice guy. And he said it was unlike his experience, Mahomes Sr., who apparently he in Twins camp, he went up to Jack Morris and asked asked like how he threw his split finger or something like it. Something along those lines, like how he threw one of his special pitches. And Jack Morris basically said, like, get the hell out of here. You're going to be taking my job soon, you little bastard.
Yeah. Jack Morris, raging prick. Who would have known?
It is a big surprise. I think everyone's pretty shocked.
Who would have thought like an old white guy with a mustache and a ball cap would be an utter dick?
It's really a shame for Twins pitchers. Like I think was Blylevin was also a Twins pitcher who has recently turned out to be kind of a jerk. Like all these Twins pitchers who are like white mustachioed guys are turning out to be kind of like not the nicest men in the world. So Mahomes actually was a pretty good pitcher. He was drafted in the 6th round, so right in that Al Leiter Jr. Range. And it's funny I mention him because you'll hear why that's funny. Mahomes actually started his first game in April 12th of 1992 and, you know, won April 21st with the Twins. Had an okay career with the Twins. He's not a particularly storied player, but he did go 8-0 in the 1999 season, which is what we're going to be covering, and helped the Mets reach the playoffs a year before. And he was with them during this point. They made that Subway Series, World Series, where they got swept unceremoniously by the Yankees. His stats aren't amazing. He has a 42-39 win-loss record, 5.47 earned run, pretty good strikeout pitcher, 452 strikeouts. But, you know, just kind of like a normal guy. So I thought, wouldn't it be cool if Pat Mahomes had a game where he just blanked the Phillies, where he just made the Phillies look like fools? How likely could that be? Because the Phillies are just so good. Well, it turns out, Justin, there was such a game.
What?
I know. It was May 15th, 1999. And
the late 90s. Is there a more golden age of baseball where the players were all juiced to the brim and we were all like, we don't care. And the writers were like, we don't care about that either.
Yeah. Everyone
much can, later.
We're just all going to use, and this is, I mean, I'm going to read off some of the Phillies who might have been, who may or may not have been using a lot of steroids on this team at this point. And we don't actually have to dwell on the Phillies because this is definitely a team we have covered quite a bit. Doug Glanville, Kevin Jordan, Scott Rolen, Rico Brogna, Ron Gant, Bronya, sorry. I always forget how to pronounce his name, even though like I know who he is.
Did you hear my brain screaming when you said Bronya?
Yeah, Bronya.
That's what made you regret that?
Yeah, no, I know him, and I know that it's Bronya, but I see it. I'm like, it's Brogna. Ron Gant, Mike Lieberthal, Bobby Abreu, Alex Arias, who is sort of more of a footnote, but Bob Person is still on the team. As I said to you earlier, off air, Marlon Anderson, Desi Relaford. This is a team that we have talked about on this podcast. The 99 Mets, we have not actually talked about that much.
I believe that. Yeah. Late 90s Mets. That sounds totally unfamiliar.
They're actually kind of a fascinating bunch. Honestly, I don't remember a lot of these names coming up on our podcast. Piazza has, so we won't talk too much about him, but a lot of these names are new to me. For the podcast's sake, many of them are not new to me. Like, I've heard of Robin Ventura before and, Ray Ordonez and John Olerud. I've heard of these players. But
some real baseball insiders on this podcast. Yes.
But for this podcast, for like our version of what we do in baseball, it's pretty new. So this day was actually kind of interesting. It was, do you have any bad memories of 1999 that you want to talk to me about?
Bad personal memories?
Or national memories. I mean, either way you want to go.
I mean, you know, sure, we can dwell in 1999 for a minute. We were both certainly alive. Mm-hmm. But what was going on? I mean, this was the golden age of the West Wing, the Sopranos, SpongeBob SquarePants. I'm remembering this all offhand.
I wonder if SpongeBob was out in 1999. That's a good question.
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? That guy who used a lifeline to call his dad and tell him he was about to win $1 million.
That was so cool.
And then $1 million. That was the most baller. That was such a move. I could not believe that was I can't believe that happened.
That was actually an extremely baller move. I remember extremely that happening. Like, I don't remember too much from game shows in the 90s, but man, that was like, I remember that happening and being like, whoa, that is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Toy Story.
Oh, okay.
But most importantly, American Beauty. And most importantly, The Matrix.
Oh,
that was a
sure.
deeply formative film for me. I can't say I understood it the first time, but I certainly liked that it felt like a video game I was watching someone else play. That was big for me. And then when I did understand it, I got to feel like I was smart.
If anyone knows anything about you, Justin, it's that you hate authority.
But for a child, you know, that was like that feeling of intelligence because you understood The Matrix. And then claiming I understood the second two movies when I did not understand them also made me feel smart. So that was a very formative movie for me.
Sadly, The Matrix twins, those dreadlock twins, are not going to be featuring in this particular game.
Are you kidding me?
They don't. Yeah, they were on the Mets at the time, which is funny. But no, they aren't. They aren't going to show up. I was 14 in 1999. So it's probably getting shot down by girls.
Nice.
Yeah, probably that's what was going on in my life. I had just joined my first band. That's also what was going on if I was 14. So
not me. I was only having successful interactions with women from day one. So can't relate.
So also, it's right before Y2K, which scared the bejesus out of everyone. And then lots to look forward to in America as Pat Mahomes relieves. So Pat Mahomes in this game is actually a reliever. And this is a curious dirty inning because it looks as if when we enter this dirty inning that the Phillies are going to comfortably glide to a win. And this is a period of time in this Philly season where there was still some hope. There are three games over 500. The Mets are, six games over 500. So they're doing better. But I mean, they're really the class of the division at this point. And the Phillies are still very, very much up and comers. Even calling them that is a little generous. So, it's a kind of a hopeful moment for them. And getting up 6-0 on these Mets, pretty good. Not to mention, on the mound was Al Leiter. Starting this game. I told you it would be interesting that I brought up his son. Somehow only got 6th in Cy Young voting.
Wow.
The funny thing is, his ERA plus is higher than Glavin, who won the Cy Young with the Braves, not the Mets. And but incredibly, the highest ERA plus belongs to Trevor Hoffman, who had a 265. Actually, I lied. Trevor Hoffman is second highest. He had a 265 ERA plus, but they won the ERA. The highest, and I don't know how he did not win Cy Young. In 1999, Randy Johnson, 248 ERA, which was a league low, 12 complete games, league high in innings, league high in strikeouts, league high in batter's face, league high in ERA+, and league high in FIP. Oh, I'm looking at MVP. Wait, what am I looking at? Because he did win the Cy Young. Hang on, I'm confused. Oh, okay, never mind. I'm looking at 90. I'm looking at 98. I'm so sorry. He almost won it with Houston. His year in Seattle prior to being traded to the Houston Astros in 98 was incredible. It was a 4.33 ERA. He got traded to Houston and immediately was nails. I don't really remember Randy Johnson in Houston, but Houstonians probably do because he pitched over 11 games started. He had 11 decisions, only one loss, and a 1.28 ERA.
Well, again, folks, it's our research that we believe sets us apart here at the Dirty Inning. And just as I'm jumping in here, speaking of research, Trevor, I'm looking at the 1999 Phillies media guide. On the cover is Scott Rolen and Curt Schilling.
Yep, he's on the team.
And the title is Leather and Ace. And I feel like is leather and lace? Is that a common phrase? Is that what that's a play on? Or
I guess so. It sounds like it sounds like a really
sexual.
It sounds like a really bad attempt at a pandering a novel written by a straight person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's also accurate. It sounds like trash. I don't know why that seems like a first attempt that no one was like, well, we can't improve on that. I mean, we nailed it first try. Get it out there. Get this in people's
ace.
Get this in people's hands.
Ugh. Well, okay. So that's the reason. So Al Leiter actually had a really good year the previous year, Cy Young votes, and along with, you know, up there in Cy Young voting, it was a real golden age of pitching. Glavin, Maddox, Smoltz, it was the year before, this is why I got screwed up, it's the year before Johnson, Randy Johnson had his four straight Cy Young awards. Really just like an incredible group of people, and Leiter was right there with them. So, I mean, this is a game that I'm sure the Phillies in this early part of the season are looking at and saying, it's going to be a statement game. And it is. Initially, they score six runs off of Leiter in three innings, which is like wild. You know, you would never expect
that. That's a hell of a statement. And honestly, the Phillies were being so open about this season. The Mets being who they were, like the Mets were contending at this point, right?
Oh, like absolutely. They were, I mean, this is like, this is a serious team. Edgardo Alfonso's on there, John Olerud, Mike Piazza, right. Robin Ventura.
They're ready to go off. And the Phillies, in their opening day graphic, as they were introducing like the television broadcast for the team, they literally put up like print shop stock art of a construction zone sign. To reference that they were like rebuilding, like they were being that transparent with like, okay, folks, they had a bunch of clips of like back in the 70s, like Mike Schmidt with poofy hair, like all these great plays, times of Philly's glory, which were, again, I mean, 93 was 6 years before, but they hadn't won the World Series since 1980. They didn't have a lot, I think, of tape to fall back on. So they were flashing images of that, and then they throw up the construction sign, a lot of Scott Rolen stuff, and they were just kind of telling people, hey, however low your expectations are, why don't you go ahead and just lower them one or two more levels so that at best
it's
this
funny
is
that,
a pleasant
like,
surprise.
I mean, it's funny looking at that that they then lost Scott Rolen and Curt Schilling later. Because why wouldn't you want to stay a team like that?
Oh, they also lost Terry Francona, who was managing the team, I believe. Was that his first year managing for the
team? I believe that's right. I think let me. So, yes, it's Francona managing. You're correct at that. It was not his first year. Not his first year by a long shot. His first year was the 97. David J. Roth pointed out that while we remember Pat Mahomes, the football player, let's not forget Pat Mahomes, the baseball player who had one really good year with the Mets. And it was this year. He had a very solid year, 3.68 ERA, didn't start any games, but finished 12, 63 innings pitched, and like just, you know, made it work. He was basically like a fixer for that team. And it's a team that was one you're removed from going to the World Series. So it's like it's a pretty serious role he had.
Yeah, he really shouldered the load there. That's is that what made you want to look up any potential dirty innings he may have victimized?
Yeah, sort of. Like, well, actually, he tweeted that after, but I remember some, the Jack Morris story made me look up because I was like, wait, his dad played baseball? And I looked it up, and he definitely did.
Damn.
So, yeah, I was just surprised that he actually played baseball. And I found out, actually, this dude played baseball at the highest possible level for quite a while. So, like, it's pretty cool. He didn't have it, but he had a career, and he had a couple games against the Phillies, and this one, he is not as much dirtiness as he kind of nicely, he nicely bookends the dirtiness, let's say. So, for you, at the top of the fourth, the Mets are, they're down 6-0, and they are facing Carlton Lower. Now, do you know anything about Carlton Lower?
Just, I believe in one of our patented obscure Phillies pitcher offs where everyone just retweets or replies to tweets with names of other obscure Phillies pitchers, usually from this era of Phillies baseball. I did Carlton Lower once, but I said Carlton Lowe. I couldn't even remember his actual full name. I think he was another guy that my dad was like, oh, they've got that new guy start, because there was a lot of like new guys on the Phillies rotation, and me being a young fan.
I mean, he was a first round pick, so I could see why. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, like it was another like notable addition that turned into nothing. But like my dad would tell me when the Phillies got a new player, and because of how well I got to know all the players in 1993 as a fan, I was like I would stay on top of that. And looking back, like, I knew the names of just the most random ass, low ass transactions, ass that normal people just don't bother themselves with, and why should they? As a first round pick, Lower was a little more distinguished, but I do recall that I went into that based on my dad saying that, thinking like, oh, we have a new good player, this is great, and it turns out he was just Carlton Lower.
Yeah, he sucked really badly.
Yeah.
Like, I hate saying that because, of course, it's one of those things like, oh, well, you go and do it. Yeah, of course I couldn't. But maybe I could pitch as well as him. He had a career 6.12 ERA, a career 4.5 strikeout 9, paired with almost 3 walks an inning and over 1 home, 3 walks per game and over 1 home run a game. His worst year was with the Padres. Nice. Where he pitched 4.1 innings to a 24.92 ERA. Just one of those good ERAs.
Damn. Yeah, and he didn't play it. He played in 2003 for the Padres again, but in 2002.
Well, and that's the funny thing. I don't know anything about Carlton Lower because he's just gone away. The only thing I know about him at all is that I'll tell you the exact extent of my knowledge of Carlton Lower. Carlton Edward Lower, so his middle name is Edward. He was born on September 24th, 1973. He was chiefly a starter over parts of 4 seasons. He played for the Phillies and the Padres, and now he owns a real estate company in Wyoming.
Oh, well, see, that's more than anyone could possibly know about Carlton Lower.
I gotta send you this. It's from archive.org, so I don't know how much this is still around or not. This is from 2010, but I'm going to send you in our Zencaster chat, and you can post it or not, but you should click on this and see Carlton Lower's incredible mustache.
Oh, wow.
Check out this mustache.
That's not handlebar, right? Fu Manchu?
It's not a Fu Manchu because it doesn't like trail down. Like, the Fu Manchu is supposed to go a little below the chin, I think. So it's sort of like a mix. It's like a neater handlebar and a shorter Fu Manchu.
Do you ever notice that guys who play Major League Baseball but don't really like make an impact in a serious way, in their bios later on, it always says they realized their dream of playing Major League Baseball as a way of telling people like, oh, he played professional baseball, which, hey, you know, if I did that, I'd bring it up all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, and you know, what are you going to do? Like, it's a real estate associate. You get a real bona fide Major League Baseball player as your real estate associate. Yes, please. I don't care how much you played.
I will add what you diligently researched briefly in the book released by Baseball Prospectus called Mind Game: How the Boston Red Sox Got Smart, Won a World Series, and Created a New Blueprint for Winning. It's a title, guys. You don't need to write the introduction on the cover.
Wow, yeah, that's a lot.
But in that book by Steve Goldman in Baseball Prospectus, it just mentions offhand that it faults Terry Francona, actually, saying he overworked his young starters, Robert Person and Carlton Lower, leading to a full breakdown of the rotation and a burning out of the bullpen of the Phillies in 1999 in August. It cites that the team went into 1999 with what they're calling unrealistic expectations.
Ooh, ouch. Yikes.
Yeah, they said,
they
said the season.
I don't think it was an overworking issue with Carl Lauer. He just wasn't very good.
I think they're saying that the season came apart when Curt Schilling's shoulder melted in June.
I mean, probably, yeah.
There was just nothing else there. If the next man up was Robert Person and the next man up was Carlton Lower, then yeah, that rotation.
I mean, this is a guy whose like career best ERA in the minors was, and you know, he had some times, like he had a couple, he had like a half season in Reading, and you know, in 95 he basically pitched to a just under a 3 ERA, but like this is a guy who couldn't strike out more than 7 per 9 in the minors. Like I don't know, man. Like, you can't do that and you don't have control and you let up home runs. Like, it doesn't matter how much Terry Francona works you. Like, you're just not going to really make an impact.
But he realized his dream.
He did realize his dream, which is more than I've done. But
that dream was a nightmare.
He was born on a large farm in the heart of Cajun country, it turns out. He majored in business and baseball, which sounds like the cover of a Phillies press guide.
Yes.
And, yeah, let's see. Well, so he got traded to the Padres and he met his wife, Kathy. And now he's excited about beginning his second career now that injuries have taken their toll. And he moved to Jackson Hole.
Hey, you know what?
He likes to hunt, fish, and snowmobile.
Good for Carlton Lower. He seems like he's having an all right time of things, and he doesn't have to worry about like all the, byproducts of a prolonged major league career, and I don't mean that totally facetiously. He just gets to live his life. Doesn't have to think about like, oh, I gotta give it all up, or like, oh, I've got this heinous injury that's left me utterly ruined, or I missed so much of my children's upbringing that they're just strangers to me now. And he's not he's not even like Desi Relaford, who maintains that like weird Philadelphia grudge, even though he like if every time he's stepped up and been like, hey, Philly, I don't like you. Everyone's like, who is that?
why is Desi Relaford talking to us again?
Why is that man on the bus so angry?
Someone calm him down. Carlton Lower is pitching this game, and he actually has a nice first three innings. In fact, he only gives up one hit. And of course, because he's Carlton Lower, he gives up three walks. So it's not exactly like looking great, but he is, you know, striking out and walking some guys and giving up only one single to John Olerud and, you know, just like walking Mike Piazza, but, you know, not so bad. Well, it gets to the top of the fourth and boy, oh boy, here's where it starts to fall apart. We get a walk to Mike Piazza. Have you heard of him before?
There's nothing Carlton Lower could have thrown Mike Piazza that would have been a strike. You know, it would have just been obliterated beyond recognition.
Mike Piazza walked. Let's see how many times Mike Piazza walked in this game. He walked twice, both of them by Carlton Lower. Both times he saw Piazza, he walked him.
Carlton Lower, I'm not doing this. I gotta live long enough to get my real
kids.
Estate license.
He didn't have kids at this point. I plan to have kids. So Piazza walks, and then Robin Ventura comes up, and so you know about Robin Ventura, right? We've heard about him
occasionally.
Yeah, pretty big deal. Mostly like a big deal as a White Sox, I would say, but had his moments with the Mets and the Yankees and the Dodgers, and of course managed the White Sox for 4 forgettable years. He was also part of the infamous white flag trade, which was when, which may have been why we talked about him, but it was when the White Sox traded basically three of their young stars to the Giants when they were only 3.5 games back of the Indians.
We have, and almost certainly, just that sounds very familiar. Yeah,
I'm sure we have. Just as a refresher, though, Jerry Reinsdorf said, anyone who thinks we can catch Cleveland is crazy. And so they traded these guys, and they got Keith Foulk, Bob Howery, Lorenzo Barkello, Mike Caruso, Ken Vining, and Brian Manning. The only person that they traded of note, I believe, is they traded Roberto Hernandez, not that Roberto Hernandez, who was a pretty decent relief pitcher. They traded a couple of other pitchers as well, Danny Darwin and Wilson Alvarez. By and large, though, they ended up actually making out pretty well, which is interesting because the trade seemed to be just this total gutting of the team, and they were just like supposed to be making the most horrible mistake in the world. And actually, the next year they won the AL Central with a record of 95-67.
God, so I love the white flag trade. It just, so the GM's like, are you kidding me? These guys suck. We're close, but we're nowhere close. You know what I mean?
Not this year, guys. So we're going to trade all our best players. Sorry.
Not this year. Yeah. And then by doing this, not next year either. But then you're saying they did win the next year.
Well, they won. I guess they won 3 years later, but they won 95 games 3 years later. So like, jeez, that's not so bad. Like if you're a GM and you make one of these trades and then your team wins 95 games 3 years later, like, all right, you did a good job. I think ultimately you get to say that you did a good job.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly what people will remember. I'm sure White Sox fans remember them more distinctly, but the white flag trade, you'd probably have to explain that to a general baseball fan.
Yeah, yeah. So Ventura left the White Sox because he was, quote, according to Jerry Reinsdorf, who is a monumental asshole, I should say, he claimed that Ventura was, quote, deteriorating, which is an amazing thing to say about your the face of your franchise.
Yeah. And then he went on to be the leader in WAR on the 1999 Mets. So clearly he was really breaking down.
And in the NLCS against the Braves that year, he hit a grand slam single,
which is awesome. It's the surest sign of a decimated human body.
Yeah, it's pretty great. He actually, I didn't realize this, he hit more grand slams than Ryan Howard. He's a fifth on the all-time list, tied with Willie McCovey. So, you know, pretty impressive. Very good, very distinguished career. An all-star. I don't think he's going to make the Hall of Fame or anything, but like a very, very good player. And he was up and he singled. Nope, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. He struck out. He should have singled.
After that huge introduction about how good he is,
that's what happens in this show, right?
The opposite.
Legends are on here, and just like Al Leiter and Robin Ventura, are like two of the biggest players we'll talk about in the show. And both times Ventura's up, he strikes out, and Al Leiter got lit up for 6 runs. And the next guy up is Brian McRae, and he walks. And Brian McRae, the most notable thing I can tell you about Brian McRae is that when he played for the Royals, he played for his dad, Hal McRae, who was the manager, which is funny.
That's very touching, I guess.
Yeah, it's nice. It apparently was not the first time this happened. It was, let's see, where did it say? I think it was the fourth time it had happened in that in the history of baseball, which is pretty neat. Like, I don't know, like how many times do you imagine, like as a baseball player, that you'd get to like coach your son?
You're asking how often do I think about you coaching me in the major leagues? And that's all the time.
Yeah,
frankly, it's kind of the only thing ever.
It was kind of our dream. We did, it didn't work out, but it was our dream. And McRae was benched in favor of Vernon Wells in Toronto when Vernon Wells was still there. Remember that guy?
He was the Blue Jays star for a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they inked him to like an enormous contract and he got bad.
Funny how that happens every time.
So Brian McRae, not super interesting. He's like sort of an okay center fielder. He walks. So, now Lower has 2 on from walks, and this is the Carlton Lower kiss of death, as now we get some interesting names that weirdly are the bottom of the Mets order, but have some interesting and like kind of compelling qualities to them. So next up is Benny Agbayani, who almost Absolutely. Certainly you've heard of. He's a very beloved Met. I like this. It's hard not to like this guy because obviously it was a Philly killer, but like he also, I mean, he's just like a nice guy. And apparently his Wikipedia says he is a popular figure with fans where his successes, even though he had limited success, his successes were often met with Benny, Benny, as well as Benny and the Mets, a parody of Elton John's Benny and the Jets.
Thank you for explaining that.
Yeah, I appreciate that help. Wait, Benny and the Mets, what is that about? Like, yeah, that's the team he played for, of course. He also drove in the winning run in the only game the Mets won in the 2000 World Series. I thought they were swept, so that's kind of cool. I always thought they were swept in the Subway Series. And this is a funny Agbayani story. So apparently he caught a pop-up in a game against the Giants, and he thought he had the third out but only had the second. So he gave the ball to a kid in the stands and ran towards the dugout. But then he realized his mistake, ran back, took the ball from the kid, and threw it at home plate. But by that point, after the ball had left the field, the play was already dead, and everyone was rewarded two bases, which would be like a ground rule double. And the Giants took the league. The Mets won the game, strangely enough, which I don't think you're allowed to do if that happens. And then Agbayani gave the fan another ball. But I like that he realized his mistake and ripped it out of this kid's hands. Like, give it back!
Sort of in the context of giving the ball to a fan one out early, that's a heads up play.
It's not bad. Like it definitely like didn't Jason Wirth do that one time or something? Who did that on the Phillies? Wasn't there a Philly who did and like everyone got mad at him?
Oh no! I mean, Jason Wirth yelled at a guy in front of
his
team.
There was the foul ball thing.
Yes, he didn't get the ball back, but yeah, he did. He certainly did scream at a man in front of his young child.
But that was cool when he did that.
Yeah, it was great. I'm sure those people are fine and don't think about that every day at all.
Well, Carlton Lower's not done yet. He has one out and three on. It is bases juice as many Agbayani singles. And now we got the horrible Mets, but base running a trio of Piazza, McRae, Agbayani. Yes, everyone just said it at the same time as I said it at home. We all know. And up to bat, by heart. And up to bat, Ray Ordóñez.
By heart.
I was wondering when he came up if he related to Maglio, and I don't think so. Maglio is from Venezuela. Ordóñez is from Cuba. Yep. Ray is from Cuba.
Do that one as well.
But he defected from Cuba. He was he apparently traveled back 20 years later and was given a hero's welcome, which is cool because Cuba rocks. Ordóñez is an interesting cat. He was never really a good offensive player, but he was an incredible defensive player, like sort of like a Freddy Galvis type. He set a major league record by playing 101 consecutive games with no errors. He actually played all of 99 with only four errors, in arguably, according to Wikipedia, the best single season performance ever, based on the number of errors. He didn't strike out a lot. He laid down sacrifice bunts, but he didn't hit very well. No power, not a lot of walks. And his lifetime OPS was 599, which is, I will remind you, in the late 90s, early 2000s.
When baseballs were unhittable.
Right, yes, of course. So one of the really interesting things about him is that he was part of this Sports Illustrated cover. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself because maybe I'm not. I think maybe it was Ordóñez. I'm sorry, I lost my place, but I'm pretty sure he was part of... There are some of these guys. It was a couple of the members along with Ventura and Piazza were on the cover of a Sports Illustrated that said best infield ever, which is awesome because it wasn't. So it was Ordóñez. It was in 1999, Olerud, as he'll come up later, appeared with Edgardo Alfonso, who will show up again, Ray Ordóñez, and Robin Ventura. And the magazine raised the debate as to whether the four talented defensive players comprised the best infield in Major League history.
I mean, there's
turns out it wasn't, but...
There's not a cover like that doesn't look absolutely silly in retrospect. I mean, what are we talking about all the time? Jeff Francoeur, The Natural. Is that what you were literally about to say?
No, that's a great one. But what I was going to say was the one where they have like the Lakers and it's Steve Nash and Dwight Howard and it said this is going to be fun and the Lakers just crashed and burned. It was terrible.
Oh my God! Yeah, so they put that's to sell magazines. Like every time they're like, yeah, these are the guys who are gonna be the guys, and 6 weeks later, people are like, these guys are all gone.
Yeah, turns out they sucked. But Ordóñez was actually a really great defensive player until he broke his arm trying to tag out FP Santangelo at second base. And he actually was not able to play in the World Series because of it. And he never was able to bring it back. And so he got really bad and he was taunted by unhappy Mets fans throughout the 2002 season. Which is harsh. Yes. Harsh to be taunted for breaking your arm, but there it is. Ray Ordóñez, heels. Well, doesn't single. I wanted to give him some credit. It's sort of the coward single. He hits a sacrifice fly. Piazza scores.
A walk is a coward single.
No, the sack fly is a coward single.
A sack fly is a coward surrender.
So anyway, Ordóñez hits the sack fly, and then it's 6-1, right? That's enough for the Mets to start feeling a little frisky. And so they pinch hit for Al Leiter. Al Leiter's out after three innings, and they bring in Matt Franco.
I mean, it seems like something Gabe Kapler would do when you're trying to scare your offense into like, beating a 6-run deficit to the 1999 Phillies. It's like, all right, well, we got to take a dramatic step here, but it's not like there's a pitcher on our bullpen who can't handle the Phillies right now. So,
yeah, exactly. So, they bring in Franco, and Franco is like a career pinch hitter, pretty much. Not much to distinguish him, but he is kind of a Matt Stairs type because he has the record for most walks in a season by a pinch hitter, which is pretty cool.
That's an interesting, yeah. I don't know how many niche roles there are for like, I'm a pinch hitter who specializes in walks. Like, that's useful, but you just don't hear about it too often.
Yeah, he had 20 walks in that season, which is like, if you think about a pinch hitter, that's pretty good. Like, you just want your pinch hitter to get on base. Like, he probably had a pretty good on-base percentage in that year. Like, it works. He also hit a single and beat Mariano Rivera in 1999. The Mets were trailing the Yankees by one run with two outs and two strikes, and he hit a pinch hit single off him. Franco is also interesting because he is, he did steroids, so he was in the Mitchell Report, but also he's the son of a famous film producer and the nephew of Kurt Russell.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a little more interesting than he's a baseball player who did steroids. Wow. Did not know that.
I mean, he sure did steroids, but he also is related to Kurt Russell. So, you know, time heals all wounds.
Those Russells, big baseball family, as I'm sure you're aware of the documentary, The Battered Bastards of Baseball from Netflix, that talks about how, what was it, Kurt Russell's father who ran a minor league baseball team in the Northwest somewhere that I can't remember now. Maybe
sounds
Portland,
right.
Something like that.
They're a weird family, man. They're like a strange, it's a cool family to be part of.
Yeah. We're not.
No, not you and me.
We're our own family. No. You and me are our own family. Trevor, there's also a magician named Matt Franco.
The ambiguation is for the magician from America's Got Talent. I'm like, well, it would almost be hard to find a collection of words that I am less interested in, but.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let's try this on for size. He spells his name with only one T. I am now less interested.
is he Matt Gammel? No, then I don't care. So Matt Franco, not the magician, pulls a rabbit out of his hat and hits a single to right field. And now the bases are loaded again for three paper cuts. The first paper cut comes from Roger Cedeno. Know anything about Roger Cedeno?
Just that he was a powerful Met on this in this time of Met.
Yeah,
history.
Which is funny because he actually, like, I always remembered him as like a big time Met too, but he is not, like, he's not that big of a deal. He was traded to the Mets in 98 and traded away in 99. Like, he was only on the team for 1 year because Jose Reyes was right behind him. And also he was traded. The Dodgers got Todd Hundley for him. So really not a great deal by the Mets.
So the Mets traded Todd Hundley to get him and then gave him up because Jose Reyes was behind him. I mean, those are two big Mets that he got sandwiched.
That's right. Although he had a great year that year. He stole 66 bases, which was a record until Reyes beat it. He batted 313, had an on base of 396, slugging at 408. He was an outfielder. He was really, really valuable that year. So that's probably why we have an outsized memory of him. That was like his best season ever. He also broke his hand, which kind of ruined his career, which is a shame, but he was still a good base stealer. He is not super compelling otherwise. here's a funny thing for anyone who is struggling with their weight, or an encouraging thing. Even Roger Cedeno does, as he had to fell out of baseball because he took a year off and then reported to camp with the Baltimore Orioles. He was 6'1" and he weighed 274 pounds. That's a lot to weigh when you're 6'1".
Damn.
Yeah, turns out they didn't want to roster him then, which is a shame. So, you know, okay career, kind of boring career, but also the uncle of Yandervis Solarte.
A lot of uncles running around out there.
That's right. Kurt Russell is an uncle, and so there's a day. Welcome to Uncles. Welcome to the Dirty Uncle.
No.
That's going to be the Patreon exclusive, the Dirty Uncle.
Hard pass.
Well, Roger Cedeno hits the first of three paper cuts, as I said, and singles to first base, ground ball, McRae scores. And now we are at the dreaded 2-6 with the bases still loaded, and you're thinking, oh no, is this happening? Whenever you think, oh no, is this happening? Do you think it's going to happen?
On this podcast, it almost always does.
You're right. It does. And it will. because next up is Edgardo Alfonso, who actually is a fairly serious man. Yeah.
Yeah. Old 6-for-6 Edgardo.
That's right.
Wow, that was in 1999. I'm pretty sure that it was later in the season.
I'm almost sure you're right.
But his 6-for-6 night was, that's I think his claim to fame.
He got two homers off of, two homers off of Randy Johnson, in the NLDS in, 99, which is incredible. And that was, you know, God mode Randy Johnson. That was when Randy Johnson basically just could get anyone out whenever he wanted. So pretty good. He was considered quite clutch. He is actually this surprised me. He is the, seventh most valuable Met in Mets history
ever. Wow.
Yeah, 29.7 war, which is not a lot of war. It's a lot, but it's not like seventh best in your franchise, which makes me wonder a little bit about the Mets.
Yeah. There's people who consider it was a sportscaster named Howie Rose who works for the Mets. He said that Alonso was as good a pure offensive player as the Mets have ever developed. You could put Cleon Jones, David Wright, and Edgardo Alfonso on a very short list of tremendous offensive players that were ever developed by the Mets. Did you know that Wilmer Flores is the only other Met to go 6-for-6 in a game?
No!
Wilmer Flores.
That's rough.
Yeah. Alfonso kind of raised the bar by going. He also scored 6 runs in that 6-for-6 game, which I have looked up was on August 30th, 1999. Wilmer Flores, he went 6-for-6 in 2016, which is incredible. That's not just like the only Mets who've ever done that. Are they the only two to ever?
I think they might
do
be
that.
Only
yeah.
People.
Wow.
Yes. I don't think there's any other 6-for-6s.
That's a ton. Yeah.
That is an unbelievable accomplishment. Mm-hmm. It's amazing looking also at these position player war. This is BWAR, so you know maybe it's different on Fangraphs, but at the top is David Wright with 50 WAR. Because obviously, like, he was just an incredible player. Then Daryl Strawberry, then Carlos Beltran, Edgardo Alfonso, Jose Reyes, Keith Hernandez, Mike Piazza, Howard Johnson, Mookie Wilson, John Stearns. So you have a clear two eras there, and one of those eras won a World Series, and one of those eras didn't. That sucks. It must just hurt so much to look at the top five and see Wright, Beltran, and Reyes, if you're a Mets fan. It's like, wow, we really wasted it all, didn't we?
God damn, look at all those good players. I can't wait to find out what happened. Oh my God.
Yeah, it sucks. It's a real shame. So Alfonso was a really, really good player. He's a really nice guy too. He signed with the Angels when he was 18 years old. His brother signed with the Angels when he was 18. And I'm not sure which Edgar this is, because his older brother is named Edgar Jr. And he is also named, he's Edgardo. So I guess Edgar sent it, his paychecks back home so that Edgardo's dad didn't have to spend time away from the family. Which is sweet. It's a nice thing.
Damn. You want to hate a guy for going 6-for-6, but it sucks even more when they make it tough.
Well, that was his brother. He didn't do that. So, you know, it's fine. He was just a really good Met. I mean, there's not much more to say other than, like, he was excellent. And he played for a super long time. Like, after he was in the majors, he stuck around and, like, tried to make it. He, like, the last time he played with an MLB team was 2006. And he was trying to play baseball after that up through 2012. Like, wow. The White Sox signed him in 2012. Assigned him to the Charlotte Knights. Like, he just never made it to the majors. But, like, he played with the White Sox. He played with the Newark Bears. He played with the Yomiuri Giants. He was in the minor leagues with the Rangers. He played with the Long Island Ducks. It's crazy. He just kept trying. And you gotta respect that.
You get that baseball in your blood. It's tough to find the antidote.
And you know what this guy's doing now? This freaking baseball guy, what he's doing now? He's the coach of the Brooklyn Cyclones.
Are they also an independent Atlantic League, or are they somebody's affiliate?
No, they're the short season affiliate of the short season A-ball affiliate of the Mets.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Wow. Well, he's a lifer. That's really cool. And
yeah, it's pretty neat. Yeah. I actually like Edgardo. This is an extremely likable Mets team, which kind of is awkward for me, and I don't like.
Yeah, well, when Jose Reyes isn't on your roster, and what's his face, Paul LaDuca, you know, it's a much much easier.
Hey,
much,
take that back about Paul LaDuca. He was great.
Much easier team to get around. Yeah.
Oh, well, he's no Sal Fasano, but he was great. So Alfonso singles and scores, and then John Olerud's up, and now you know it's going to be a problem. John Olerud, we all know him, great defensive player, just a borderline Hall of Famer, just part of that pesky Blue Jays team that killed the Phillies, real jerk, and he great, great baseball player. And he also got a single and scored.
What is the score at this point?
5-6. So Lower has turned a 6-0 game into a 5-6 game. And we've been recording for a while, so let me just take you through the next couple of innings, which is where Mahomes just kills him. Mahomes, Ron Gant, fly ball. Mahomes against Mike Lieberthal, strikeout swinging. Mahomes against Bobby Abreu, strikeout looking. Okay? Next inning, Carlton Lower. Strikeout swinging of Robin Ventura. We're back on track. Home run by Brian McCray. Oh, no, it's tied.
What did you you dropped that 6-run lead to a 1-run lead. There's not many more guesses as to what's going to happen next.
Yep. Ground out by Benny Agbayani. Ray Ordonez reaches on an error. Pat Mahomes doubles to center because he is a superhero, but Ordonez is out at home. So they kept the tie. Thanks, whichever outfielder did that, Bobby Abreu probably, or Doug Glanville. Pat Mahomes comes up again. Doug Glanville, foul, pop fly. Kevin Jordan, doubles. Scott Rowland, fly ball. Rico Peronia, fly ball. No runs scored. And then the Mets bat, and after a walk and a stolen base, Edgardo Alfonso singles in Roger Cedeno, and it officially becomes a loss. Final score, 9-7. And since Pat Mahomes comes in the next inning and gets a foul before letting up a walk and a single, that's the game.
I love how this they beat him up just enough to make that 6-0 deficit useless. Like they didn't break off 15 runs. They won 9-7. Like it was still a close game, but they were down 6-0 at one point. So that's perfect. That's shoe on the right foot.
Yeah, and on the last out of the game, well, in case you want to feel even better about this one, Desi Relaford.
Yay!
Yeah, dig that, Desi.
Desi. Well. Well, that sucked, Trev. I'm not going to lie. That's a really bad inning.
I know you like to do a little more prep than me, but you don't have to say it sucked.
From the era of...
Oh, you meant the game. Oh, the game. Oh.
From the era of Phillies baseball that I think most of us can recall, but unwillingly. I think that's... Yeah, I think there's a lot of references here people are familiar with, but nobody's going to want to listen to, which, again, is why this podcast is so marketable.
A lot of PTSD from various 2000s tie wearers happening right now.
Well, thank you, Trevor, for bringing us this fresh, which is to say stagnant and awful, dirty inning.
Thank you, please, Pat Mahomes, for bringing it to us.
And we thank you, the listener, for being a part of our Good Fight podcast family, which includes Hittin' Season and continued success as well. So if you can't get enough Phillies for some reason, become a regular listener of these podcasts on the Good Fight, and you almost certainly have more than you can handle. And don't forget, if you want bonus content, you can give money to our Patreon. There
Please
are $5 do. And $10 tiers at this point, and you get all kinds of extra dirty inning content, extra Hittin' Seasons. John Stolness is out of control. He is exactly the voice you want to hear talking about the Phillies week to week. So we, of course, thank you once again for tuning into the Dirty Inning, and we will have another just awful chapter of Phillies baseball to bring you in the near future. But until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.
I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X&O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.